watched the tape of yesterday's game, what was the most, I guess, disconcerting thing about the defense?
That it was the difference of two halves. The most concerning was how well we played the first half and then how poorly we played in the second. Why that was, you never really know. We just played inconsistent in the second half. Biggest disappointment was when the offense stepped up and got a touchdown, that we let them go get 3 points. We let them keep the ball late in the game and only had 1 3-and-out in the second half. Only had 1 in the first half, as a matter of fact, but we still thought in the first half we did a pretty, you know, it was a pretty decent job as far as, you know, keeping the game close and things like that. But probably, like I said, the most concerning thing would probably be the difference of two halves.
Mike, do you think usually, you know, you guys wear down the other team in the second half. This time, do you think your defense, because, you know, you're on the field so long, the offense was having a tough day, that you might have worn down, especially in the fourth quarter?
No, I really don't. Our football team's in pretty good shape. I wouldn't say it was in like that. I just thought that we had some we had a few mental lapses where we made some mistakes, and it cost us. We were around the quarterback, but he always seemed to, you know, slip away from us. Some of it, obviously, is him doing a good job, but some of it is us not being more disciplined than what we've got. You know, we weren't as consistent in doing the things you need to do to play good defense as in the second half, anyhow, that we had been.
You think a key point was, what was it, 3rd and 18? You had 2 consecutive offsides there. Was that just frustration trying to get at the quarterback, or?
Well, it was certainly disappointing. I don't know. You know, I don't know why it would, you know, why it occurred, other than the fact that we, you know, we jumped off sides twice. I think it was 3rd and 13, wasn't it? And then it went down to 3rd and 3.
Yeah, right.
But anyhow, we're talking about the same situation. That was a disappointment. The biggest disappointment, I would say, in that is that it led to 7 points. We have been a very good third down team, and we did not do a good job of that in the game. And so that cost us. That was probably what cost us more in the game. You know, the disappointment was the two halves, but I'd say what probably cost us, you know, was the third down efficiency. We didn't do a good job.
How do you think you did against the no huddle, Mike?
Well, it really didn't cause much. I mean, it wasn't a hurry-up. As a matter of fact, the few times they waited on us because they really didn't have a plan until we put our people on the field. So, and that kind of caught me by surprise, because typically teams hurry up with the intention to, you know, catch you out of alignment. But I don't know what they were exactly trying to do with it. It's not their style, for one. It's not something that they do. We talked about it going into the game, but it didn't create much of a problem. We didn't sub much during it. We didn't plan on it either. So, the strange thing about it was a couple times we did sub to get our third down people on the field, and they just waited for us.
It was a semi-huddle.
Yeah, I guess that'd be a good way to put it.
Do you expect to see more of that, though? I mean, you guys do like to sub a lot, especially in passing situations. Do you expect to see more hurry-up?
Because of our roster and all, obviously we want to get our best players on the field. Some of our guys are more specialized than others, but there have been teams that try to catch us with it. We'll continue to see it, but I think our guys are, you know, typically prepared for it. So it didn't create much of a disturbance. I thought that the teams in the past, New England did a good job of it, Dallas did somewhat. Those two teams probably did the best job of just trying to disrupt what you're doing, but that wasn't the reason for any misfortune we might have had yesterday.
Now that you've played against them, your impressions of Flacco?
He's got a lot of poise in the pocket, keeps plays alive well. And I think that's probably what, he's hard to rattle. He's probably his strongest point, I'd say, is he's hard to rattle. There's a lot of guys that are big, tall, can throw the ball, but his eyes stay down the field all the time. And like I said, I think he's a tough guy to rattle.
How is he similar and different from the quarterback you're facing this week?
You know, I'm just getting into Ben right now, just kind of watching him. But obviously they're both big, strong guys. They're both hard to bring down. Ben obviously has a lot more success than what the guy Baltimore's had so far. But other than that, I couldn't really tell you. You know, they're both in two entirely different offenses. But we all know, you know, Ben's been very successful, and the other guy's just, you know, trying to get to that point, but he's a good quarterback.
Is there something specific you coach up during the week when you're facing a quarterback that can keep a play alive, like a Flacco or Roethlisberger is great at doing that?
Say it again, the question is?
Is there anything you do during the week, tell your players when you're playing a quarterback like that, that does such a good job keeping a play alive for so long?
Without giving away any tactics that we use, it's really just a quarterback has a place, and some quarterbacks are pocket quarterbacks and some are not. Some you want to keep in the pocket, some of them you actually want to get out of the pocket because they're not as good. I would say that, in the case of like Ben, for example, he's very good whether he's in or out. So we've got our work cut out for Ben this week.
Mike, what did you guys see in Ryan McBean to bring him along like you did and, you know, make him a starter mostly off season? And what's he done to kind of justify that thought process from you guys?
Back in the spring, I would say when we first started, assembling the guys as far as who'd be, trying out for the roster and things like that. Obviously, he was one that was already here on the roster, and Josh and the personnel department had determined that he'd be one of the guys to stay. Obviously, the coaches had some say in it, but primarily it was our personnel people, and they did a very good job in identifying that he'd be a guy. Ryan has done a very good job thus far. You know, he's a big, strong guy that moves around good. He hustles. He works hard. He's very raw. He's got a long way to go to get to where he'll actually be one day. I mean, some guys are closer to the final product than others, even when they're young players, because they don't have much upside. But Ryan's got a lot of upside, and hopefully just keeps getting better, each and every day and week. And I know he's getting better on the long haul, but the sooner guys can improve, the better. Really what we saw in him was just a guy that had an opportunity to make the squad and make us better. But when you have a lot of real young guys, it's hard to really say how far anybody will go. Not that you're asking that question, but to us, that's what we really look at. You know, how much better can a guy get than what he already is? And thus far, Ryan has shown that he's got some real good upside.
Mike, we've all seen the results Elvis has gotten this year in terms of sacks, but can you take us back to when he first changed positions? I mean, how difficult a task was that, and can you just give a glimpse behind the scenes of, you know, what kind of work was necessary to get to the point he's at now?
That's a great question to ask him, because I can give you some insight on how I've seen it, having been through it with several players. But there's a real question mark in the player's head about whether, if he's never done it, there's a real question in his mind about whether he can do it or not, because it entails some things that they haven't done in the past, like pass coverage, for example. But it also is an exciting position for a lot of guys because they want to make it work. Obviously, they want to make the squad, and they also see the opportunity to rush the passer and be a little bit more versatile than they are in the 4-3. And a lot of times, those same guys do find their size, a hindrance, but, you know, a lot of those guys are betweeners in size, The idea that they might not have to take on those big tackles every down is appealing to some of them. So going through the process and what a player goes through a lot of times is, at first there's some excitement, but there's also some real hesitance towards what the job's going to entail. And as they go along, I think most of them find out that it's a pretty good thing, because they don't have to fight the big man one-on-one right in his face every down. They can, get out a little wider and get things a little bit more on their terms. Pittsburgh, obviously, who we play this week, is a great example of that. They've been playing the 3-4 for many years now, so they're very familiar with it, and many of their guys have been doing it for a long time. So, I think that some of our guys, are finding that out right now and going through that process of, I think, beginning, where they really find it to be fitting to what their talents are.
Did Elvis take it that way when you first presented it to him, or how did he take it when you first tried to, kind of work with him into that new spot?
I really didn't have a choice, so I can't remember how he took it. That was the position he was going to play. But that'd be something you have to ask him. I don't recall. Like I said, when we usually go through this, it's one of those things where if you want to be here, this is what you're going to do. But we certainly don't necessarily, it sounds like we're shoving it down their throat, but the reality is, if they can do it, it really helps them. And if they can't, we'll move them back to where they were and give them a shot there. But it's, we typically, it's the decision that's, on a guy that can or can't do it. Most guys, like I said, after a little while, find it pretty appealing.
Mike, was Pittsburgh one of the teams you studied when you were last year?
They were. Yes, I did. I watched Pittsburgh a pretty good amount. I did. They were an outstanding defense last year, and always, you know, they've been for a long time, and they are again this year. Last year, I remember they were at the top of every category throughout the season. Played extremely well. They were a lot of fun to watch, as I remember.
As a peer, just kind of your impressions of Dick LeBeau and how he calls the game and those kinds of things.
I think Dick does an outstanding job. He always has. I remember way back when he was coordinator at Cincinnati, you know, years ago, not too far ago. But anyhow, I can remember when he was even a secondary coach and he wasn't coordinating. He's always been well respected. Obviously, he is today very well respected in the job he does. He's one of the. I've been fortunate to have a lot of good mentors that I worked for that were good 3-4 guys, and as well as 4-3. But in particular, some 3-4 guys, whether it was Joe Collier here at the Broncos or Bill Arnsparger that I worked for at LSU. You know, those guys are all great coaches. Those are guys I worked for. But just watching a guy from the outside, I've never worked with Dick, but watching the job he does, there's a lot to be learned. Obviously, film helps you with that because you can study what a guy does and what is, you know, things like that. And I still watch their film quite frequently to see what they're doing against an opponent because it serves us very well.
Everybody last week talked about the Ravens kind of departing from kind of their run-first philosophy and opening up a little with Flacco. Is what the Steelers are doing even more of a stark contrast? I mean, known for the, you know, the way they run the ball. Not that they don't run the ball, but, you know, Ben's tossing it around pretty good this year.
Yeah, I think they're pretty similar. I think pretty similar in that regard. Now, the offense and the way in which they throw it around is different. But both of them still have a running game. And I would say Baltimore might be a little bit more committed to certain things. But again, sometimes this time of the season, that's game by game. You know, we're not even at the, you know, we're right at the midpoint, I guess you could say so. But they're similar from the standpoint of them making the transition. The same as, you know, Baltimore and Pittsburgh have both done some of that.
Bills.
Thank you.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
All right, guys. Thank you.